It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, housing costs are going up in Wisconsin, and for many people, their income isn't keeping pace. We'll talk to two reporters about the lack of affordable housing and how it's affecting the Green Bay and Fox Cities region. First, if you're looking for a reason to take a drive around the state, our next guest has some perfect destinations for your next day off, and food is included. He's got a list of some of Wisconsin's great drive-up restaurants, and a lot of places the waitstaff brings the food right to your car. And you could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a favorite drive-in or maybe walk-up spot you like to visit nearby or far away? Do you have a favorite drive that happens to include a drive-in restaurant? Do you have a route you'd recommend? Do you have a memory of one that used to be in your community? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Eric Paulson co-hosts the Discover Wisconsin show, which airs on Valley Sports Networks in Wisconsin and Minnesota and on YouTube. He hosts the Cabin Podcast and founded statetrunktour.com, a road trip website that explores Wisconsin highways and the sights along them. Eric, welcome back to Central Time.
Hi, Rob. Good to be back.
Is this something that happens to you, Eric? You're on one of your favorite drives and you get the urge for a drive-up meal, a small drive-in diner like this?
Yeah, I'm a sucker for a good drive-in burger and a malt and whatever sides they might have. It's a huge slice of Americana, and I love going to the small towns where they've been locally owned for, you know, decades or even generations. That will pull me in more than anything.
On your new list, you mentioned that people might think of, you know, when A&Ws were everywhere, now that they're just some places, or Sonic mm-hmm. is a newer one you can drive up. You are a fan, though, of that local, independently owned drive-in. Why is that?
Well, I like I like local businesses and the independently owned businesses a lot, and they're more a piece of their town. Now, there are a lot of A&Ws that are independently owned. It's part of the franchise and everything, but I find more uniqueness by going to those local drive-ins, like all the ones we're going to be talking about here. And to me, they're a quintessential part of the town they're in.
And before we start naming names, is part of the fun here the nostalgia? Like, these things were really part of the landscape back in the day.
Absolutely. I mean, if you go back to the classics, like even in the movie American Graffiti, their whole social life was built around meeting at the drive-in and then going to other places. And of course, that's where they got their sustenance for the night. So, and in these small towns, they still have car cruise-ins. People gather. It's a social place as well as a place to get some great, often greasy food.
Hey, you mentioned American Graffiti, the movie. Did I read it right? One of our drive-ins here in Wisconsin may have been the inspiration for that drive-in?
They say it is. There's one called Mel's in San Francisco that was probably part of the inspiration, but there was an old drive-in, which is where Cops is now, and we'll talk about why Cops isn't on my list here in a minute, but Cops is a famous burger stand, and their flagship store is up on Port Washington Road in Glendale. And in the 50s, it was a drive-in called the Milky Way. And some of the writers for American Graffiti and for Happy Days and such grew up in that area. So they say that they drew some of their inspiration from the Milky Way.
And you mentioned Cops, and does it fit the definition? Let's talk a little bit about what we mean by the drive-in. I have, I'll admit, eaten a burger in the Cops parking lot. That's not really the main goal there, I don't think, right? You're looking for things where the whole concept is that you're supposed to eat in the parking lot.
Correct. It's kind of it's hard to delineate sometimes. You know, a burger stand and a drive-in are kind of, you know, they crisscross, but they're not the exact same thing. And for this list, for example, I'm basically saying, okay, the primary way you eat the food is in your car. Often there's a car hop who comes up and provides the food. And then if there's a tray hanging out your window while you eat it, that's an even bigger bonus. Generally, they're not restaurants because there's little to no indoor seating with these. So, you know, the primary thing is to pull up and get your food from someone who brings it to you. And oftentimes you eat off the tray. With COVID the past year, some places that do the trays haven't been doing them, but they're starting to bring them back. So I'm liking that.
Talking to Eric Paulson, he co-hosts the Discover Wisconsin show and started statetrunktour.com. We're talking about drive-in restaurants of Wisconsin, past and especially present. You can share your favorites at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Is there one in your community? Have you been there already this year? 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. By the way, find a link to Eric's list of restaurants around the state at WPR.org/Central Time. All right, let's start taking our tour now, Eric. Let's start. Well, I love the name here. It tells you what it is. The Drive-In Restaurant in Grantsburg.
Yes, they're right to the point. And I discovered them actually because we filmed there for Discover Wisconsin a couple of years ago. And we were focusing on cheese curds, deep fried cheese curds, and theirs are among the best. Great place in the far northwestern corner of the state where highways 70, 48, and 87 come together. And you see, that's a flashback place. Like you can eat in, or they'll deliver food to you in several parking spaces out where the menus are right out there and everything. But inside, it's just adorned with old 45 records and memorabilia on the walls, and a lot of car culture enthusiasts. They'll get there with a bunch of their cars and show them off. And the drive-in actually has two locations. One's in Wisconsin, the other just over the river in Taylor's Falls, Minnesota. So the drive-in probably gets more visitors from the Twin Cities area than any place, but it's a great place. And they opened in 1956. They're an original.
And this is a pretty common thing. A lot of the ones you talk about have been open since the 40s or 50s, right?
Yeah, the oldest of which is in Kenosha. I found Kenosha, and I know Kenosha well. My dad grew up there. Kenosha is kind of the drive-in restaurant king of Wisconsin because there's three of them there that I can name that have car hops and everything. And the oldest of them is called The Spot. And that opened in 1945. So it was one of the first drive-ins in the country. And they're still operating. In fact, I just had a burger there about a week and a half ago. It's delicious.
And you can name the other names. We went from northwest to southeast in the state. The Spot and
where
else can
we
go in Kenosha?
Pretty quick, yeah. The other two in Kenosha, and I'm not going in order as you would read it on statetrunktour.com. But The Spot, and then there's Andy's Drive-In, which isn't far away on Roosevelt Drive, which is also Highway 50. And then on the north side of town on Washington Avenue, right across from the Velodrome, the world's oldest operating bicycle track, the Velodrome in Kenosha, right across the street.
We did an interview about that. It's super cool.
Oh, really? Yeah,
yeah.
It is. I used to ride my bike on there as a kid. It's very steep. And right across the street, you can pull up to the Big Star and enjoy their food. So Kenosha's got the trifecta.
Now, you mentioned classic cars showing up at the drive-in in Grantsburg, and reading your piece on these, this is a pretty common theme. And I guess it makes sense. A lot of places, the local classic car club, it's a natural meetup spot, the drive-in restaurant.
Absolutely. It's the logical place for everybody to gather. And some places do it up really big. I know Wayne's Drive-In in Cedarburg especially does that. And I happened to catch them one day when I was there, and they had their classic car club. And so I included a couple of pictures I took of that in this piece. So you can see that for yourself. And Wayne's seems like it's an old school drive-in from the 50s. And they certainly go with the theme, but they didn't open until about 1998. So.
Interesting. Now, let's see. Oh, you've got so many on the list. Let's go to Hager City on the Great, or near the Great River Road, and the Hager Heights Drive-In.
Yeah, and I stopped by there. They hadn't been when I was actually there. I haven't eaten there because they weren't quite open for the season yet, but I got a good picture of them. They're right across the river from Red Wing, Minnesota. And I know they're very popular. And it's funny because a lot of these places focus on chicken. They focus on burgers. Hager Heights, along with burgers, they have a lot of chicken dinners that they, in fact, they have a big fiberglass chicken out front. Just some of the, broasted chicken is their big thing. And so a lot of these drive-ins, they do the basics that you would expect, but some of them have specialties that they like to be known for too.
Oh, yeah. What are some of the other favorite specialties you've run across at drive-in restaurants?
You know, it's a lot of times it's burgers, but then they'll do the broasted chicken. They'll do hot dogs. Sometimes they're known for their chili. A lot of times ice cream and custard are a big draw. These drive-ins are big on desserts as well as on burgers and fries and shakes and malts. And then just sometimes it's, some homemade specialty that can be creative. And those vary greatly depending on where you are.
We're talking to Eric Paulson, co-host of the Discover Wisconsin show, founder of statetrunktour.com. Wisconsin highways and things you can along them. We're talking now about drive-in restaurants around the state. We've got a link at WPR.org/Central Time to Eric's list of many of those. And you could join in with your favorites. Do you have fond memories of going to drive-in restaurants in the past? Do you have a fond memory of going to one yesterday? Is there one in your town that you look forward to when it opens up for the season? Love to hear from you and your favorite local drive-in restaurant, past or present, at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up our conversation with Eric Paulson, co-host of the Discover Wisconsin show and founder of statetrunktour.com. We're talking about drive-in restaurants around the state. And you could join in with your favorite Wisconsin drive-in restaurant or beyond Wisconsin at 800-642-1234. Do you have a favorite one, maybe one in your town that you like to go to, or one that is closed but you'd like to share memories of it? 800-642-1234 is the number, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let's go to your calls now. Eric is with us in Lake Tomahawk. Eric, hi.
Good afternoon. I just want to shout out for the Dog and Suds down in Tomahawk. I grew up down there, but we make a little pilgrimage down there at least once a year for the Texas burger. It's good stuff.
The Texas burger. Tell me about it.
It's just really sloppy. Everything, but the kitchen sink type burger. It's what you need. It's good for the soul.
Excellent. Eric, thank you so much for sharing that. Pilgrimage to the Dog and Suds in Tomahawk, he says. Now, I noticed this, Eric, on your list. A lot of restaurants will have a sloppy Joe's. Eric says he's got a really sloppy burger there. Hold on. I'm supposed to eat these in my car. All right, it's going to all end up on my pants, right?
It is tricky eating sometimes. definitely take extra napkins anytime you're imbibing at the drive-in, and I'll definitely check out the Dog and Suds. Being in Tomahawk, I'm assuming it's right off Highway 86, so I'll be getting up there soon, and I'll probably add it to the list.
And the Suds, of course, are going to be root beer. What's the deal with root beer at drive-in restaurants? Because that's almost a must-have.
When I was telling you about some of the specialties that they make, a lot of these drive-ins make their very own root beer, and so that's a delicacy that they love to serve if you're not in the mood for a shake or a malt. And I love malts and shakes, but let's face it, there's a lot of calories and sugar.
That's the thing. Yeah. Like if I'm eating a burger and fries, like I want the custard or I want the malt. My body does not really want those that much.
Yeah, it's easy to overeat, and you're not exactly burning calories sitting in your car.
True.
Either. So you do have to take those things into account.
Thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. We'll go next to. So it looks like we lost Sally in Madison. Wanted to recommend Kilty in Oconomowoc. Her family, I guess, started it. Kilty's is on your list, I think, Eric.
Absolutely. Actually, I lived in Oconomowoc as a little kid, and the first burger I ever ate was a Kilty burger because I grabbed at it as my parents were passing it between the seats. it was Kilty. I'm not sure what year it opened. I believe sometime in the 50s, but it's on the east side of Oconomowoc along the original Highway 16 that connects Oconomowoc with Milwaukee. But the expressway that they built in its place is right behind it. So it's very easy to get to. A wonderful place. It's the checkered red and white and black. There's the canopy, and it's incredibly popular in the summer when they open. And that is one of my all time favorites is the Kilty.
And it's got a Scottish theme, hence the Kilty.
Yeah, the sign shows a guy who looks like he's Scottish, with the kilt and everything. They do have car hops. They used to roller skate. Now they don't, but they're not in kilts, but that would be a fun part of the theme.
All right. Thanks to Sally for sending that note along. We'll go to Jenny now in Burlington. Jenny, hello.
Hi. Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah. What did you want to tell us about Jenny?
So Gus's Drive-In in East Troy is one of our favorites to go to. It's a fun place. They don't have car hops, but you can sit at tables, and they have classic car shows on Saturday nights.
And what's your favorite menu item there, Jenny?
Probably their shakes. I like the cheese curds, too, but chocolate malt.
Excellent. I love it. Thank you so much. That, I think, is also on your list, Eric.
Yes, it is. It's in East Troy, just outside of East Troy. It's on today County ES, but before they built I-43 between Beloit and Milwaukee, County ES was Highway 15. That was the main road between Beloit and Milwaukee, so it was very, very busy and a great place to locate a drive-in. I've been to Gus's. They don't have car hops, but you can sit inside there, but they have the spaces outside. They have the canopy. I think that's very important. And my favorite thing there is the onion rings. They were just fantastic at Gus's.
Jenny, thanks so much for that call. We are talking about the drive-in restaurants of Wisconsin and beyond. If you would like, Eric Paulson is with us from Discover Wisconsin and statetrunktour.com. We've got a link to his write-up on a bunch of these drive-in restaurants around the state. You can find that link at WPR.org/Central Time. And there's still time for you to share your favorites, past or present. If you have a memory, even if that memory is yesterday, 800-642-1234 is the number. That's 800-642-1234. Back to your calls now. Renee is with us in Central Wisconsin. Renee, hi.
Hi, good afternoon. Fun show. So I'm putting in a little plug here for Milty Wilty. It's a drive-in. I think 73 plus years. Yeah, they have the car top, right? They are, you know, there's car show on Fridays. It's seasonal, varied menu, best fries in town. And when you're in high school in this town, if you score a Milty Wilty shirt, you wear it. So there you go.
Well, wait a minute. Is it hard to get hold of these shirts, Renee?
Oh, probably not. I'm sure general public can wear them. I just know my three kids all poked fun, either poked fun or scored one. You know, you got one as an employee. So I'm not clear if they still do that, but yeah, it's cool.
Renee, thank you so much for sharing that. Milty Wilty, Eric.
Well, what's funny is I'm looking at the Milty Wilty piece on my article right now. That was the next place I wanted to bring up. They're right there in Wautoma, and they opened on June 11th, 1947. So this Friday is their birthday, and they're really one of the originals having opened that far back.
Awesome. Thank you so much for the call. We'll go to Justin with us now in Waukesha. Justin, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I wanted to give a shout-out for John's Root Beer in Waukesha, Wisconsin. It's kind of off the beaten path a little bit. They don't have much for car hops, but they homebrew their own root beer and have amazing root beer floats. They've also kind of been a shining part of our community over the past few decades. It's been fantastic to see them support us and us support them over the years.
Justin, thank you so much for sharing that. And Eric, that's part of why you like these locally owned ones, just the back and forth support to them and from them.
Absolutely. And John's is an example of one of the ones that started as an A&W root beer stand.
That's right. There are a few of them on your list that did that, right? They were basically splinter factions from A&W.
Yeah, basically. And then, they've billed themselves as the best root beer in Waukesha since 1937. And they do the sloppy dogs and slaw dogs and all kinds of variations on the hot dog there, too. Really, really good place.
Awesome. Thanks a lot, Justin, for calling at 800-642-1234. Chris is with us now in Eau Claire. Chris, hi.
Hi, how you guys doing?
Good. What do you got for us, Chris?
So originally I'm actually from Junction City, Wisconsin. And on the old Highway 10 between there, it's between Marshfield and Point, but there's an old car hop there. They're still running. They don't do the roller skates out to the cars anymore because they've expanded and actually have a sit-down place. But, I mean, they got EAT written on the shingles, one of the spiky light-up bulbs off the roof, and it looks like a carousel horse on the roof as well, but it is great food and their food runs the gambit. But I mean, it's a great place to sit down. And if you're driving that way, go for it.
Excellent.
Chris, what's the name of the place?
It's called the Car Hop.
Car Hop, right.
Oh, the Car Hop. Well, again, I missed that one and I'm definitely going to go there and add it.
Awesome. Thanks, Chris. And that reminds me, I didn't bring up the roller skate thing. He says they don't do that anymore. They used to at the Car Hop. There are a couple places that still do the bringing your food on roller skates. Is that right, Eric?
A few of them do, and Wayne's Drive-In has been one of them. In fact, for a Discover Wisconsin show, I found rollerblades that were in my trunk, and I used those to deliver a tray of food to people. And I very much disappointed my producer because I know he was hoping I'd wipe out.
Oh, I would. You successfully delivered without spilling?
I did, and don't ask me how, but you could see my face during that scene. I'm really concentrating.
Intense moment. Thanks a lot for that call. Eddie joins us next in Milwaukee. Eddie, hello.
Hi, I wish to point out Artie and Ed's drive-in in Oshkosh. On the east side of Oshkosh, they have young women on roller skates to bring the food to your car. It's delicious. I go there every year during the Oshkosh fly-in for the EAA.
Oh, okay.
Well, that's coming up soon, so. Yeah.
Yeah. Eddie, thanks for the calls. There is one there that does roller skates. Oh, we've got lots of callers and not too much time. Let's go right back.
That was Michelle. Another one I was going to mention on the skates.
Oh, good. Michelle joins us next in our Arcadia. Michelle, hi.
Hello. Our favorite drive-in restaurant is JoJo's, and it's actually in Independence, a few miles from where we live. And they have car hops, and they have outdoor seating. They have picnic tables. There's no indoor seating. And there's a local meat place in the town, and so their meat is just excellent. Ooh. My favorite is the California burger. My husband likes the chili cheese dog, and they have hand-dipped ice cream cones.
Very nice. Michelle, thanks a lot for that. You're still finding new ones all the time, Eric, right? I mean, you have a pretty big list, but there's lots more.
What's funny is, yes, I have 26 down, and somebody who was reading my article on the site made a comment about JoJo's in Independence. So I've done some research on it, but I've not been there, but that is on my list as well, right on Highway 121. And that's going to be gorgeous because it's right in the Driftless area, too.
Thanks a lot for that call. Now, a lot of these, of course, they're drive-ins, so your car is probably involved. There's one where you have to take a boat to the Albatross drive-in on Washington Island. Tell us about this one.
Mm-hmm. They just opened for the season on Memorial Day. And if you take the ferry to Washington Island right off the tip of Door County at the end of Highway 42, right after you disembark, you pretty much follow the one road that goes in. And right at that first corner is the Albatross drive-in. It's owned by this great family. We interviewed them on Discover Wisconsin, too. They were really nice, and they're very popular with visitors. They're very big on being north of the tension line. They point out their food takes a long time. Just relax. Enjoy the food. You're not in Chicago anymore. Just relax. And my favorite burger there is called the Albie Burger, and it's got Swiss cheese and a bunch of other great stuff on it, and their cheese curds were absolutely amazing. Definitely a wonderful spot to visit between Memorial Day and Labor Day if you get to Washington Island.
Eric, we'll leave it there. Thanks so much for joining us. It's been a lot of fun.
It has. Thank you, Rob.
Been talking to Eric Paulson. He co-hosts the Discover Wisconsin show, airing on Bally Sports Networks in Wisconsin and Minnesota, also on YouTube. He hosts the Cabin Podcast and founded statetrunktour.com. He joined us to talk about Wisconsin drive-in diners. Find a link to his ever-growing list and article at WPR.org/Central Time. Keep sharing yours, by the way, on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Scott in Plymouth mentions Chester's in Plymouth. And I got a note that one of them we mentioned, the Milty Wilties in Wautoma. I don't know if I said it was something else. Milty Wilty, Wautoma. That may be a correction. I'm not sure. Coming up after the news, we'll find out why housing is getting tougher to afford for many people in Northeast Wisconsin and what's needed to meet that demand. I'm Rob Barrett. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. Coming up tomorrow at 7 on The Morning Show, a new drug for Alzheimer's got approval from the FDA. It's getting a lot of buzz, but some researchers say our expectations shouldn't be too high. Find out about the hopes and the limits of the new treatment tomorrow morning at 7 here on the Ideas Network. Now, about a third of Wisconsin's households either fall below the federal poverty income level or don't make enough to cover all their basic needs, especially housing. News from the Northeast Wisconsin News Lab takes a close look at the issue of affordable housing in the area in and around Brown and Outagamie counties. It's an area with a growing population, but the rising cost of homes and new apartments is out of reach for many long-term residents. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Have you had a tough time finding a place you can afford to live in your area, whether it's this part of the state we're talking about or beyond? How much of a bite does housing take out of your annual income? Did you find a place you could afford? What did it take to do it? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. Jeff Bollier is a business reporter for the Green Bay Press Gazette. Jeff, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, Rob.
And Nusaiba Mazan is a business and career reporter also at the Press Gazette. Nusaiba, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
Nusaiba, let's talk about what we mean by affordable. People might think of, people in severe poverty having trouble finding housing. This is more than that, though, right? This is people who, in many cases, are working.
Yeah, definitely. Affordable from a organization like nonprofit and government standpoint means that you're, you know, utilizing approximately a third of your rent or 30% of your rent on housing. But a lot of households are spending more than 30%, even more than 50% on housing.
And Jeff, do we know how much of the population in this region, Brown, Outagamie County area, having trouble finding housing in that affordable range, under that, you know, third or more of their income range?
So we do have some information on that statewide. You know, there are about 550,000 households that struggle with what United Way of Wisconsin calls a household survival budget, which is basic expenses, housing, medical care, transportation, et cetera. We found that roughly 1 in 10 of those families live in Brown and Outagamie County. There are about 58,000 households where people live above poverty level wages, but their income isn't enough to sort of make all of those ends meet.
Nusaiba, let's talk first of all about the supply of housing that people at lower income levels could afford. What did you find when you started looking for apartments with the people who are trying to find them?
Definitely supply. It's not meeting the demand for affordable housing. For extremely low income households, there's a shortage of more than 100,000, 119,000 housing or housing units. According to the National Low Income Housing Coalition. And so even on a city basis, there is a shortage of hundreds of units, and we'll have to be building hundreds of units in the years to come in order to meet anticipated demand.
And Jeff, part of the story here is income. What do we see with income levels and how they're matching up, keeping up maybe with rising housing costs?
Yeah, very, very much so. Income is at play in this, you know, and that's partly because of building or construction issues, but we can dive into that later. But what we found was we looked at American Community Survey data, which is sort of Census Bureau information. And we found that between 2000 and roughly 2019, that while median rent in Brown, Outagamie, and Winnebago counties increased roughly 50% since 2000, that median household income has only risen about 30 or 32%. So, you know, wages are not keeping up with the sort of overall household survivability budget or the household expenses that that families in Wisconsin encountered.
We're talking about housing affordability, especially in northeastern Wisconsin, though these issues are coming up elsewhere. Nusaiba Mazan is with us, and Jeff Bollier, both of the Green Bay Press Gazette. They've been doing a detailed report on this issue. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Are they telling your story? Have you had trouble finding affordable housing where you live? What are you seeing? Are houses and apartments going up? Are they affordable for you? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. Nusaiba and Jeff, you both shared a story. You kind of rode along with people going through the situation. I want to hear a little bit about both of them. Let's start, Nusaiba, with Stacey Burkhardt. Can you tell us a little bit about her experience?
Yeah, Stacey is a self-employed business owner in the Green Bay area, and she has 3 children. She found that she was on the housing hunt last year, but in looking for housing, she found it difficult to find affordable housing with the number of bedrooms for her for children within the area. And so it took months to find housing, and eventually a friend in December 2020 called her saying a friend of a friend had bought a building. And so she kind of credits that. She says that, you know, if I hadn't had that, you know, friend of a friend connecting me, I don't know if I'd have been able to find housing. And so definitely it's a very competitive housing market. You have to kind of be at the right place at the right time, and you don't have much time to hesitate or think about options.
And Jeff, you tell the story of Amber Edward. Can you tell us a little bit about what she found looking for housing?
So Amber's story, like Stacy's, is kind of exemplary of a lot of what Nasiba and I and our colleague Natalie Brophy have found as we talk to people struggling to afford their housing. And Amber, you know, had a situation where her daughter and her and her daughter's father all lived together, but the place that they lived was sold, and the people who bought it wanted to live there. So she had to find a place to live through sort of no fault of her own, and she found just nothing was available that met their needs at an affordable price. And so she ended up on this huge downward spiral that sort of started in 2018, where, you know, her losing housing led her to, you know, kind of couch surf with friends and rely on, you know, friends and loved ones in order to get by. And her life just kind of fell apart, on, you know, through no fault of her own. And then, you know, she found that as she slowly was able to rebuild and kind of tap social support services that are available, that she ran into this whole new problem as she was trying to put her life back together and get things stabilized again, where as she was getting more self-sufficient, the support that she relied on was kind of cut out from under her. And so it took her roughly about 3 years until earlier this year from 2018 to sort of get her life back together. And she has become very adamant about trying to help others experiencing this kind of get through it and work their way through.
We're talking to Nusaybah Mazan and Jeff Bollier, reporters with the Green Bay Press Gazette, working on the series Unaffordable, No Place to Call Home, looking at housing issues in Northeast Wisconsin. You can join in at 800-642-1234. For your personal budget, have you seen more and more of it taken up by housing costs? Have you had to leave a home or apartment because it got too expensive? Do you worry about a lack of affordable housing in your area? Coming up, we'll get into some of the economics of building housing, houses or apartments. If you are a builder or developer, does it make financial sense to build lower cost housing? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk now with Nusaybah Mazan and Jeff Bollier from the Green Bay Press Gazette, looking at the reporting on a new series on affordable housing in Northeast Wisconsin. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions for our guests or your experiences looking for housing yourself. 800-642-1234 is the number to call. Let's bring on a caller now. Michael is with us in Milwaukee. Michael, hi.
Hi, guys. It's an interesting topic. I got a little story and then a comment or a question. So my father, he owns his house in Milwaukee, and he randomly received something that said that his house was valued higher than originally that he had it. So now he has to pay more property taxes. And they never came to look at the house. They never did anything, never came inside, nothing. So my question is, why? What is driving these higher taxes, which drives up property taxes, what drives up rent, what drives up the cost of owning a home, that obviously what we're talking about making people not able to afford it.
Michael, thanks for the call. I don't remember if that came up in your pieces. Nusaybah, is that something anybody mentioned, the impact of property taxes on the cost of, say, rentals?
Definitely. There's you know, you're seeing an increase, and I think that, like, maybe Jeff could probably speak more a little bit to that in his research.
Yeah, Jeff, is that something you ran into?
Yeah, so in general, housing costs are going up. You know, I haven't talked to anybody yet who really has seen, you know, or said much regarding taxes driving up the cost, but they are kind of one of those hidden costs that go into developing housing. You know, you have to figure in your tax bill in any property development. But, you know, there are things like permitting fees and site planning and, you know, all of the sort of approvals and stuff. And as though, you know, as all housing prices rise, land prices, material prices, everything else are rising also. And that is kind of contributing to an overall rise in the cost of developing housing and also the cost of housing in general.
Thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. Jeff, earlier you mentioned the construction side of things. This is something I think came up in both of your pieces on this topic. There is construction happening. It's not usually these more affordable units. What's going on, Jeff?
Well, you know, yeah, the challenge is that, you know, regions like Green Bay, Appleton, Oshkosh, northeastern Wisconsin, you know, pretty much dating back into the housing market collapse in the 2000s, had a bit of a shortfall of lot development, home building, apartment construction, and everything. And it had left in communities like Green Bay and Appleton a significant shortfall of apartments versus demand. So there is demand and need for apartments sort of across the scale from, you know, low income or affordable housing, sometimes called workforce housing also, you know, up to the luxury end of the spectrum. And what we have seen kind of really developing very rapidly in Green Bay and Appleton in our research on this is the luxury and sort of market rate developments have been there, but the affordable housing effort is not. And part of that is building costs have gone up so much that you build a new building and, you know, you just, based on what income levels would dictate, referencing back to Nasiba's term, you know, reference of housing affordability or housing burden, you know, just the cost of materials and labor make it very difficult to build affordable housing without some sort of support or assistance.
And Nusaiba, you looked at some proposals, some ideas to give incentives for this kind of construction, including tax credits. What kind of things are out there?
Definitely. There are federal and state level tax credit programs. And in talking with a Northeast Wisconsin Community Action Program, which also builds housing units and housing buildings, there's a great need for tax credits. You might not be able to even make the building or consider making a building of affordable housing units without the help of tax credits. And yet there's a large number of in terms of dollars requested in terms of applying for tax credits, more than there is money available.
And Jeff, you write that this is not just an issue for the people looking for housing. It's starting to become a workforce issue. Employers want to bring in workers, but they don't want to come if they can't find places to live.
Well, that is certainly part of it. You know, the shortage of housing units and apartments in general means it can be difficult for people who are relocating for a job or for the quality of life to find something that is affordable to them. So, yeah, very, very much that does kind of play into it. And, you know, businesses are starting to tell, you know, chambers of commerce and, you know, business development organizations that this is having an impact. And the other side of that is that United Way Wisconsin noted in its report for 2020 on the impact of not meeting the needs of low-income families, that by providing housing, by allowing people to be able to afford household necessities, you know, that could inject $22 billion of increased consumer spending into the economy. So while this is an issue that is affecting families, over you know, many families, it also is affecting or has could have an impact of positive sort on the state's economy as well.
Talking to Jeff Bollier and Nusaiba Mizan from the Green Bay Press Gazette, looking at their reporting on a lack of affordable housing in northeastern Wisconsin. Let's go back to your calls now at 800-642-1234. Nate is with us now in Eau Claire. Nate, hello.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Oh, and we lost Nate right away. Okay, I've got a note from our producer here. Nate says that he invested in rental housing. He's worried that the problem with low rent housing if the property is damaged, the renters don't have the assets to fix it. And Nusaiba, I think it was in your report that, yes, some landlords and developers were were worried that low rent housing was risky for that and maybe other reasons. What kind of things did you hear?
For sure. The developers have expressed that, you know, there is a risk or a financial risk to building low cost or affordable housing units. Because that there's more fluidity, there's employment issues or credit challenges when it comes to serving low-income households. So there is that concern that there won't be that money to repair units or money to collect or a consistent stream of income when it comes to renting to low-income households.
Thanks for bringing up the issue. Sorry we lost you on the line there. Jeff, you write that another concern for some renters is that they feel they've been victims of housing discrimination, especially people of color. What kind of things did you hear?
You know, we've heard from people. Our colleague Natalie talked to a woman down in Oshkosh who really just, you know, she had been applying. She had been a good tenant. You know, for, I believe, up to 5 years straight, she had paid the rent on time. She had good jobs. You know, she was a woman who was Black, though, and she could not figure out why people were saying no to her over and over again. You know, we have heard from resource groups that work with communities of color in the Green Bay area that, you know, that issues do arise and that, you know, sometimes it is a little more subtle or maybe not so overt a sort, but that people, that residents and people of color in these communities are feeling like something is not right, or that they, you know, sometimes they are, you know, just kind of not sure that the reason they are rejected is exactly that legitimate or what, and they don't always know what to do. And the lack of ample housing units means that they end up kind of pressured to stay where they are, or, you know, to, you know, they can't kind of get out of unpleasant circumstances.
In our last couple of minutes, I want to look toward the future now. Nusaiba, is there any kind of indication that housing, available housing, is going to catch up with that gap we were talking about earlier?
There's definitely a community focus to building more housing units, and it'll just take a multifaceted and consistent effort to bridge that gap.
And Jeff, what are you watching for as you continue to cover this story?
Well, we are continuing to talk with as many people from Northeastern Wisconsin as we can about their experiences, trying to understand the variety of needs and wants in this area. We're also trying to focus on sort of what solutions are out there for how to address where there are gaps, you know, how people's experiences, you know, how people like Amber or Stacy, you know, by sharing their experiences can help the community figure out like where people fall through those cracks or what additional support would be needed in order to help resolve these issues or make sure that they, you know, that people do not have to find themselves experiencing homelessness.
We'll leave it there for now. Jeff, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
And Nusaiba, thanks for being with us again.
Thank you.
Nusaiba Mazan and Jeff Bollier are business reporters at the Green Bay Press Gazette. They join us today to talk about a series they're working on. It's called Unaffordable, No Place to Call Home, looking at housing affordability issues, especially in northeastern Wisconsin. You could find a link to that series. We've got it up at WPR.org/Central Time. That's WPR.org/Central Time. If you have a story to share, let us know. Tweet us at Central Time WPR. Coming up tomorrow here on Central Time, it's our weekly look at the top stories in national politics, including the latest on efforts to pass new voting rights bills in Congress. A new project looks at excessive drinking in the U.S. county by county and finds that Wisconsin has a problem in every county. Take a look at the latest report on Wisconsin's alcohol problem. And a new plan with bipartisan support aims to rebuild spending on research and development in the United States, and not just in coastal cities that already have big technology sectors. Find out what it would mean here in the Midwest. That and more coming up tomorrow here on Central Time. Yesterday on the show, we talked about geometry with UW-Madison math professor Jordan Ellenberg, author of the new book, Shape. A bunch of you shared your math and geometry memories over on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Here's a sampling. Brandy writes, I loved math, geometry, algebra, trig, but it's not for everyone. John said, yes, I loved maths. It gave me clarity. Kevin says, I was honor society in foreign language, but never able to pick up the language of geometry. And Pat has a practical application. If you play pool, you use geometry. I don't know, Pat, I could always picture the triangles. I just can't make the balls go in the right direction. Not consistently, anyway. Then there was a little mini follow-up conversation over on Twitter, at Central Time WPR. This reacted to the question that came up, how many holes are there in a straw? There's been surprising debate on that. Eric writes, I'm a stalwart zero-holer in straws. Holes have a bottom, in my imagination. Well, mathematician Jordan Ellenberg responded, what are you for bagels? Eric writes, dang it, I got shut down with one simple question. But if I allow that a bagel has a hole, then holes can be sliced. If that's the case, there's an infinite number of holes in a bagel. Jordan says that is a novel theory. The frontiers of bakery mathematics. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network.